Hello, and welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I'm Jessica Vosk, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer.
And hi, Max Crumb.
Hello. Hello, ladies. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh. He even did that in our timbre. He was like, hello, ladies. Wow.
Yeah.
Everything's...
Oh, raise your palate.
Raise the palate.
Hi.
Well, Max, you have an amazing career from Disaster all the way back to winning the role of Danny Zuko in Grease Live. You're the one that I want. And while you are indeed the one that we want, we don't want to talk about that at all.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah, that's right. You know, we love your career, but we don't want to talk about careers here. We are here to talk true crime always. And Jen and I have often wondered, more times than not, like, what if I am a murderer? What if I am a sleepwalker? What if I've committed a crime at night? Do I take my knife from my kitchen? Do I not know that I did that? So I'm particularly
dissociative. Are you like,
suppressed memories? You mean, I'm very excited about today's topic, very specifically because I just got a Fitbit. Like all of you, our listeners can't see this because we don't record these
I'm going to take a photo of, I won't post you, Max, without your permission, but we have a request for more screenshots. And so Jessica, this will be of us too, of your Fitbit. Okay.
Well, Max just posed.
Oh,
Max,
wait, you did?
Posed.
Matt, I did. Max, do you mind? I'll do all of this.
No,
everyone
no.
Ready? Yeah. Go ahead. Pose. Okay. Awesome.
So now that we've done
I'm live streaming this right now. Hope that's okay.
Yeah, I want you. I put it on the live stream. Put it also on
the live stream.
Yeah, put it on the live stream and also on all the apps that are now no longer existent for the Republican Party. But anyway, what we wanted to say is that I did just get a Fitbit. I know many people already have a Fitbit. Don't come for me because I'm new to the Fitbit in 2021. I'm 85 in theater years, but I got a Fitbit that tracks my sleep and I feel like it could tell me, because it's connected to my phone, if I'm a serial killer.
Like you wake up and you're like, oh my goodness, I have 3,000 steps in and blood on my sneakers.
See, but isn't that great, Max? Because then it says my REM sleep was this, my deep sleep was this, my light sleep was this. But also, you seemed to be a bit active in the bathroom and there's blood on the tub.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would.
To Connecticut last night.
Yeah, exactly. So... But I'm not saying that I'm that type of person. So but let's move a little bit forward, Max. Number A, do you know if you sleepwalk and murder people? And number B, why is it that you are interested in true crime? If you could answer those in succession, we would really love that.
Okay. So to answer the first one, I do not sleepwalk. In fact, the opposite, I suffer mostly from insomnia.
Ooh.
Since I was little. So I'm just like walking. Instead of sleepwalking.
Okay.
You're fully aware and awake when you've murdered people.
I said that to say this. Mm-hmm. When I murder, I am fully lucid. Aware. I am in control. And the first time I murdered at night, I realized I was not dreaming because I could flip on and off the light switch. And you know, you can't do that in dreams. So
can you?
You cannot. Try it. You just can't. It's a thing. You can look it up online. If next time you're in a dream and you're like, oh my God, I'm in a dream, go to a light switch. You can't.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Let's establish this. Well, let's just establish this now, Max. When we have our guests on the podcast, we do call ourselves doctors, and you're our doctor sleep. Like you are our doctor.
Yeah.
So, hey, professor in Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that information about the light switch, because I had no fucking idea.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
And like Jess said, part B, why are you interested in true crime? Like, do you have an original story that made you interested?
I've always sort of been a Nightmare Before Christmas type, if that makes sense. I've always liked the darker things in life. I've been fascinated with Jack the Ripper. First, sort of Summer of Sam, BTK, NSYNC. And for me, it's always been about the style of murder and true crime. And it's always, I don't know. I just always like weird shit. I've always been like really into alternative dark, like why people do this. What, like how, because I, in my mind, don't have thoughts like that. So I mean, I think we all have weird thoughts, but like, I know that I don't have thoughts of like, I'm going to kill somebody or murder somebody. So I'm so fascinated by these people because I think humanity is so connected that it's like, we watch these things because we're like, they're normal. They just snapped. It's either, you know, you either believe people are inherently good or people are inherently bad. That's I think what it is. And I don't know what I think. I don't know what I think on that. I don't know if people are good or bad or if they're, everyone's good, but you just snap or if it's you're born. So I don't know. That's what fascinates me.
I love that you're open to questions. I think questions are actually more interesting than answers half the time, you know? I know when we interviewed Kristen Chenoweth, that is, she said, you know, she definitely believes in evil, you know, that evil exists. What were you going to say, Jessica?
Well, you know, whatever. I was going to just add that as actors, I feel like we get this all the time. We have to inhabit other people's moods and personalities and their shit. And as characters, yada, yada, yada. I would say the three of us are more of the character actor type. And in the story, that's right. Get out now, Max.
Leading
shut the door
actors.
And don't turn the light switch on.
Hang on, my dog's sneezing.
Oh, honey.
Are you done?
Oh, poor thing. Oh, baby. But as actors, there's probably, I know that there's a fascination for me in that. And again, I don't know. I'm like, why did you snap and kill that person over those French fries when you could have just gotten some more French fries? I mean, but the mind is a tricky thing. And naturally, this episode, the mind is a super duper tricky thing. And according to my Fitbit, not only do I get my steps in, but my mind is also tricky.
Moving right along, Max, you grew up in Arizona, correct? That your formative years were spent there. Okay. So today's finale will be a sleepwalking case that took place in Arizona. But as this might be the only time we hear on Killing It on Broadway talk about homicidal sleepwalking on our show, we're going to touch upon some notable cases and this fascination station, as Jess would say, in general, so much so that it's a common storyline found in popular television shows like Perry Mason, I think it was season one of the OG Perry Mason, as well as Criminal Minds, etc. So here we go. But first, credit where credit is due. We got some information today from Wikipedia. And in regard to the Arizona case, we pulled some info from Wikipedia's source itself, which was lakesidepress.com, specifically the work of Dr. Lawrence Martin, props one and all. So what is homicidal sleepwalking, you might ask, Max.
Well, I certainly would. My name's Jessica. I would love to know.
You'd love to know. I'm going to tell you. Homicidal sleepwalking, also known as homicidal somnambulism. Thanks, guys.
I did it.
Homicidal somnambulism or sleepwalking murder is the act of killing someone during an episode of sleepwalking. There have been some cases in which an act of homicide has occurred and the prime suspect may have committed the act while sleepwalking. The veracity of recorded cases is disputed. About 69 cases had been reported in the literature up to the year 2005. What are some of the causes? Is that something you want to know, Max and Jessica?
Yes, of course, please.
Yes, doctor. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to tell you. Sleepwalking occurs during slow wave sleep, the deepest stages of non-REM sleep. While there are other parasomnias that occur from REM sleep, it is caused by an inappropriate physiological event where the brain tries to exit slow wave sleep and go straight to wake. In normal sleep, the brain makes the transition from sleep, either from stages one or two of REM sleep, but almost never from slow wave sleep. As a result, the brain gets stuck between a sleep and awake state, which is really, really scary. I don't want to get isn't that scary to be stuck there?
But hey, excuse me.
What? Yeah.
I was just going to say, have either of you ever experienced sleep paralysis?
I was just about to say that's I'm paralyzed when I'm between. I'm not like murdering.
I think yes. I mean, and by the way, sleep paralysis sucks. Like
terrible.
Oh, it's just terrifying. Like I have sleep paralysis, and of course now naturally being the dodo I am, I'm like, it's spirits. I'm being visited by spirits. Mm-hmm. So like, but I'll lay in bed and I can't. Like I will be fully aware of shit that's going on around me, but cannot move. Yeah.
That's I've heard that's like in response to unresolved trauma from your childhood, usually.
Which like
that has to do with, because I had those as well. I don't want to. No, but like as a kid, like I used to have those all the time. And I used to have this mechanism to wake myself or like to move. I would start wiggling my finger and then my hand and then my arm. And then I'd be like,
I know, me too. To
it's awful.
But I do the same thing now. I'm like, move your arm, Voss.
Uh-huh.
Move your arm. Okay. So let's go to therapy. That's cool.
Yeah.
I will get that as well. You guys, I want to play in the sandbox too. I know I get that as well. And inevitably it's something awful and I can't move, but I will almost hear myself wake myself up at the same time my husband is waking me up, because all that I am able to produce are little horrifying sounds like a dog.
Oh my gosh, that's
just whimpering.
Scary.
Oh, and I can't move, but
it's the worst.
Everyone now, we get a lot of people who listen to this first thing Monday morning driving to work. They're all gripping the steering wheel right now, terrified.
Everybody
they're like, that happened to me last night after Bridgerton. All right, well, let's.
Okay.
And now take us back.
I'm going to take us back. Now we're going to get to this later, but there's a gentleman by the name of Kenneth Parks. And in this case, his EEG showed an abnormality where his brain tried to wake from slow wave sleep 10 to 20 times a night. Jess, do you know if your Fitbit registers your slow wave sleep?
I'm going to say I'm not quite sure, but it does tell me how many times I've woken up. It tells me how many times I'm restless. It tells me REM, deep, light.
Yeah.
Sassy, sultry, and calm.
Can you imagine? It's like your sleep is sassy. You are sassy when you
and
sleep.
Then you want to know what I would do? Put it on my special skills and ask for someone to marry me. Okay.
Now, it remains unknown why some people will commit murders in their sleepwalking episodes, but it seems reasonable to assume that many conditions must be met. Kenneth Parks, as we just mentioned, was planning to go to his in-laws' residence the next day. He was stressed and depressed from his marital and financial troubles, and he had been sleep deprived because he could get no sleep the night before. And Jess, I'm going to ask you to take it away.
I shall take it. Although I will say, I would make a rap song that was like, I was stressed and depressed, feeling less. Van and I went to the house of my in-laws, got really upset. I was stressed and depressed. You know what I mean? So anyway, let me take it back.
Okay.
In 1987, Kenneth James Parks was a married 23-year-old Canadian man with a 5-month-old daughter. Now he had a really close relationship to his in-laws. I mean, close, you guys, let us remember that because it becomes important later. And he was close with his 42-year-old mother-in-law, Barbara Ann Woods, who referred to him as her gentle giant. In the summer before these controversial events, he developed a gambling problem and he fell into deep financial problems. And to cover his losses, he took funds from his family's savings. Always a wonderful choice. Love when they do that. And then he began to embezzle at work. And eventually in March of 1987, his actions were discovered and he was fired from his job. And on May 20th of that year, he went to his first Gamblers Anonymous meeting and he made plans to tell his grandmother the following Saturday, May 23rd, and his in-laws on Sunday, May 24th, about his gambling problems and financial difficulties. This is why I don't do this. I don't gamble. I'm not a gambler. I've been to Vegas. I go see Cirque shows. You know what I mean? Early on the morning of May 24th, 1987, Kenneth Parks drove 20 kilometers from Pickering, Ontario, to the house of his in-laws in Scarborough, Ontario. Now, he entered their house with a key they had previously given him and used a tire iron to bludgeon his mother-in-law to death. How do we feel about the gentle giant now?
Not so gentle.
Yikes. Not so gentle. Now, he then turned on his father-in-law, attempting to choke him to death, but the man managed to survive the attack, thank God. Then Kenneth got back in his car and, despite being covered with blood, drove straight to a nearby police station and confessed, turning himself in and saying, I think I've just killed 2 people. Yikes indeed. And Parks' only defense was that he was asleep during the entire incident and was not aware of what... Max, give us your 411.
No.
Do you think that's BS? Do you think that's BS?
I do. It sounds to me, I already kind of have I don't know that I believe in sleepwalking. Killing, but I believe in sleepwalking. I don't know, but it's like that to me is like that is textbook big baby behavior. And instead of, you know, feeling his feelings and then moving through them, he decided to kill 2 people. And then he went and told on himself because he's a little baby and thought if he told on himself, maybe he'd be like, okay.
Ooh,
that's what
there's there's a big difference between getting up and doing laundry, which there are a lot of reports of mundane things like I'm going to make some toast or I'm going to do some laundry or I'm going to slit your throat after driving 10 miles to do it. I mean, it's kind of a big leap.
Well, and
do
and
people drive?
Yes.
When they sleepwalk?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. People do some things that you shouldn't do.
But do we think that sleepwalking is kind of like hypnotism, where it's just like this group of people that are like, yeah, I do that.
Well, or a cult of sleepwalkers. The point of it is, I mean, what I'm saying is nobody believed it. Nobody believed him. Like Max, Right. Nobody believed him. Even sleep specialists were very skeptical about this. Now, after careful investigations, the specialist could actually find no other explanation. And Parks's EEG readings were highly irregular, even for a parasomniac. This, combined with the facts that there was no motive, that he was amazingly consistent in his stories for more than 7 interviews, despite repeated attempts of trying to lead him astray, that the timing of the events fits perfectly with the proposed explanation, and that there is no way to falsify EEG results, led to a jury acquitting him of the murder of his mother-in-law and the attempted murder of his father-in-law. The Supreme Court of Canada upheld the acquittal in the 1992 decision R v. Parks. Some doctors believe Parks should have been found to be not guilty by reason of insanity instead. Now, unless you need some time, Max, to like have your little sleep paralysis nappy time moment, I want to know what you think about the acquittal and et cetera.
I don't know. A lot of that stuff from the 90s, from all the stuff I watched, to me just sounds like a bunch of men who want to be right about something and solve something. And so I feel like nothing was really ever solved. Like, it was like, well, there's no explanation. I believe this man. We're all men here. This man's fine. That to me is what that seems like that was. Because it was in the 90s.
But like, who gets acquitted though? Of course. But who gets acquitted?
Of murder.
Of murder based on an EEG.
I think, again, it's always like the quiet people who like nobody knew. Everyone's like, he was so sweet, and like I feel like maybe it's because he was, to me, 7 interviews giving the same thing is just like, okay, what does that even mean? You guys retired to do 8? Like, I don't get it.
Jen,
what are you asking me? What I think?
I want to know your thoughts on this acquittal. I think it's outrageous.
I do too.
I think it's outrageous.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna get there.
Or like
we're gonna
go into a mental hospital, yo. I know, but what I'm saying is.
Yeah, since you asked, I'm going to reserve my comments, I think, a little longer, because I think there's going to be mounting evidence here, folks.
I understand. I know there is.
Of more outrageousness. I mean.
Even more?
Oh, wait, just you wait, Henry Higgins. All right, so we're going to move forward. All right, so moving on to other notable cases. All right, because that'll give us even more stuff to get mad about. This is
so we're clear. This man is just went free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Acquitted. Yep. Bye. Thank you. Back to Canada. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
All right. So
hold on tight.
You're maybe
Max.
Accidentally teaching people they can murder with this.
No, seriously. Seems like a great excuse. Like,
right? Yeah, don't do it. Yeah. Guys, don't do it.
Seems like a great pause. You Mm-mm. just stopped yourself. You go, right? You know what?
Right. Yeah. All right. So moving on to other notable cases. This is the Boshiers case. Sergeant Willis Boshiers was a U.S. serviceman based in the U.K. He confessed to strangling a local woman named Jean Constable in the early hours on New Year's Day, 1961, but claimed that he was asleep and only woke to realize what he had done. The following day, Boshiers disposed of the body in an isolated lane. Several days later, he was arrested and charged with murder. At his trial in February 1961 at the Essex Assizes, he pled not guilty on the basis of being asleep at the time he committed the offense and was acquitted.
And then they wrote Chicago. The Nieto case. Antonio Nieto, 58, a resident of Malaga, Spain, murdered his wife and mother-in-law using an axe and a hammer on January 11th, 2001. Nieto's daughter suffered a jaw fracture but was left alone after feigning death, and his son disarmed him after receiving a cut on the ear. Nieto claimed to have been sleeping during the attack and dreaming that he was defending himself against aggressive ostriches. I want everyone to know that Max's mouth is agape right now. His mouth is literally agape, okay?
I can't believe that. That is crazy. This episode should be called crazy men get away with stupid things.
I thought you were going to say this episode should be called Aggressive Ostriches. I mean, that is so specific. That is so specific.
He must be telling the truth.
I mean, he was like, honestly, I was so nervous about these aggressive ostriches in the farm. There were at least 14. Now, his children stated that he recognized them and had even told his son to not turn on the lights because their mother, who was gravely injured already, was sleeping. So, and in 2007, Nieto, who was already under psychiatric treatment, was sentenced to 10 years internment in a psychiatric hospital and ordered to pay 171,100 euros as compensation to the victims.
All right, so we have an instance of accountability, but it's not prison. He's in a psychiatric hospital. And he had to pay out some dough. Is that correct?
Indeed.
All right. Oof. Moving on to the Lowe case. On October 30th, 2004, the body of 83-year-old Edward Lowe was found on his driveway in Manchester, England. His son Jules admitted that he caused his father's death, but did not remember committing the act and used automatism, the definition of which is the performance of actions without conscious thought or intention, as his defense. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity and detained at Her Majesty's pleasure, that is indefinitely, in a secure hospital. He was released after 10 months.
The 10 months. Mm-hmm. 10 months. Mm-hmm. The Brian Thomas case. Now, Brian Thomas, 59 years old, who suffered from automatism and sleepwalking since he was a child, confessed to strangling his 57-year-old wife, Christine, in July of 2008 in their camper van while on vacation. He called emergency services and was heard telling the operator, quote, "What have I done? I've been trying to wake her. I think I've killed my wife. Oh my God. I thought someone had broken in. I was fighting with those boys, but it was Christine. I must have been dreaming or something. What have I done?" Now, do you think that was a good monologue for me?
Yeah.
Yes. I was riveted.
I thought you were honest.
You were honest. I believed every word you said.
Okay.
Me too. I thought this was your story.
I do too. Okay, cool. Because I don't know if everybody has seen that Law and Order is going to hire every Broadway actor.
Right.
So that was I'm going to use that for my self-shape. Moving on. Brian claimed that he'd mistaken his wife for an intruder waking up to find it was his wife. He was freed in 2009 by a judge who found him not guilty of murder.
Mm-hmm. There's a theme here. All right, now this one here, this is the OG case of all of this as a defense in America. This case marks the first time in American legal history that this defense was successful in a murder prosecution known as the Boston Tragedy or the murder of Maria Bickford in 1846. Albert Jackson Terrell of Weymouth, Massachusetts, married and living with his wife and two children. He was known to be unfaithful, and in 1845, he left his wife to be with Maria Bickford, also married and also in her early 20s. As well, she was a prostitute living in a Boston brothel. Now we would call her a sex worker, but Terrell fell in love with her. His affection was returned, and they became constant companions, living together as husband and wife. Although they were constantly together and traveled together using different names, she never abandoned her profession, much to his dislike. Early one morning, after loud noises emanating from her rooms, Bickford was found brutally murdered. Terrell, having last been seen with her, was accused of her murder. His parents hired Rufus Choate, a famous Boston attorney who was noted for the innovative defense strategies he employed to acquit his clients. As the story goes, on October 27, 1845, Terrell was alleged to have visited Bickford's bedroom after that evening's last customer had left and, using a razor, slit her throat from ear to ear, so brutally that her head was nearly severed from her body. He also allegedly set three fires in the brothel, which awakened the owner, who discovered the body of Bickford and called the police. As several people had witnessed the entrance and leaving of the brothel by Terrell, the police began a search, but Terrell had fled. He was arrested on December 6th in New Orleans, Louisiana, and returned to Boston for trial. Public outrage was fed by sensational newspaper accounts describing the evidence against Terrell. Not only had he left his wife to live with Bickford and was under a charge of adultery, he had been seen on the premises in the hours before the body was found. A bloody razor lay near her body, bits of Terrell's clothing and his cane were at the crime scene, and fires had been set nearby as if to destroy evidence. Although many witnesses could testify to Terrell's affair with Bickford and to the presence of Terrell at the brothel that evening, there were no eyewitnesses to the actual crime. Choate emphasized to the jury that no matter how overwhelming the evidence of Terrell's presence at the brothel that evening, the evidence was all circumstantial, as no one had seen Terrell kill Bickford. Moreover, Choate argued Terrell had no motive to kill Bickford, to which I heartily disagree. He said he didn't want her to do her job no more, and she did. And he was lurking around. We'll get to this, but he was lurking around.
Again, it's a confidence problem.
Well, he probably heard her having sex. Perhaps she was enjoying it. I mean, yeah, it's very clear he was jealous and angry.
A little baby.
Right. And she defied him. And I don't know. There's never been a case in history where men feel like women are their property. Come on. Maybe I'm overreacting. All right. So Choate set forth two possible explanations for the jury to consider. The first was that Bickford could have committed suicide. Can you imagine? I'm going to slit my throat tonight.
Yeah.
But that there was no proof that she did, Choate says there was no proof that she did not in the frenzy of the moment. Oh, excuse me. This is a quote. There was no proof that she did not, quote, in the frenzy of the moment with giant strength, let out the scream of life, end quote. However, the brutality of the slashing made this explanation implausible, you think? So Choate turned to an alternative explanation that Terrell, as a habitual sleepwalker, could have murdered Bickford under the influence of a nightmare or a trance. In the 1840s, there were no medical explanations for sleepwalking, and medical experts differed over its cause. So with oratorial flourish, Choate read to the jury popular treatises with descriptions of violence attributed to sleepwalking, while reminding them that if they returned a guilty verdict, Terrell would certainly be executed, even if there existed a remote chance that he was innocent. Meanwhile, the Boston newspapers sensationalized the trial, arguing that Terrell was guilty. Mm-hmm. And after less than 2 hours of deliberation on March 30th, 1846, the jury returned its verdict of not guilty. What utter horseshit, you guys. Thoughts? Usually when the jury's out that short, we usually think that means guilty. And Jess Correct. Is nodding her head like a very sweet terrier.
Bobble, like a bobblehead.
Mm-hmm. Well, Correct. It's true. Isn't that usually the case where it's like always. They deliberated for 2 hours and then it's always guilty?
Yeah. And that's generally, yes, it's always, it was such a short deliberation and every defense attorney goes, shit. So.
Can I ask something?
You must.
Yeah.
How much of this, or these, do you believe were just incompetence on the side of the law? Because I think we're in a time now in 2021, we're realizing the law and using law is like, it's, I just feel like that is just loopholes. That is literally loopholes and the boys club and men looking out for men and being like, let's not ruin this man's, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's insane to me because that's in the 1800s. Do you believe that most of these cases are that, like good old boys looking out? Or do you believe it's people who really believe in the law and they actually, do you know what I mean? Based on what 2020 has shown us about judges and all that.
Well, it's a very tricky thing because I do not think, I think that the law works for certain people and doesn't work for others. And that is unfortunately a trend that we've seen forever. Now, is there a part of me, do I believe in the law? Yes, at times I do. I'm very sort of jaded at this time because I think that injustices are, we see so many injustices, especially between 2020 / now 2021. 2020 right. is really ugly stepsister. But I think there's also a part of this where people think it's too fantastical and people think like, well, it has to absolutely be the fact that this person was sleepwalking. Wow, what an event. This can't possibly be when somebody was coherent and we don't have the evidence to suggest otherwise. And, you know, but again, it's part of why I've always had this fascination with law and wanted to be a lawyer because I don't think that people should be allowed to get away with this shit. I really don't.
I think.
Fred, lay down. Go lay down.
One thing. Sorry, we're having a Fred issue, everybody.
No, Fred's down. He's down.
They love it when Fred.
I know. You know, podcast. He won't. He gets like, why aren't you paying attention to me? Now I'm going to sit down on the floor by this pillow. Whatever.
So.
Now I'm just going to be adorable. So, and you're like, Fred. Right.
Killing It on Broadway is proud to support A-Step, artists striving to end poverty. This organization was started by our friend Mary Mitchell Campbell, musical director of Broadway and beyond, who also wrote our theme song.
As we all know, the arts are in a challenging time right now in the U.S., and A-STEP has been doing innovative things during this pandemic, including feeding thousands of families, as well as bringing the arts to children. If you are able, please go to astep.org to make a contribution to the Arts Resilience Fund so they can keep killing it by bringing smiles to the faces of children everywhere.
That's astep.org. Thanks, killers.
He's like, I love you so much. I'm like, shut up, sir.
I'm working.
Well, and as far as I'm concerned, one of the things Jess often talks about here is the advent of DNA. And right. I find it interesting that the third, fourth, and fifth cases that we just recounted to you happened in 2001, 2004, and 2008, long after we started regularly using DNA. I would also add that it seems to me there was a lot more success in, let's say, the 1970s with using insanity as a defense than there is now.
Oh, yeah.
And I think this kind of defense, along with cases of claiming, you know, by reason of insanity, were probably abused to some extent, right? And it's a shame because if there is a real case where someone actually did commit murder while they were sleepwalking, kind of like the boy that cried wolf, we're probably not as apt to believe them anymore because of times where that defense was used inaccurately,
correct.
Which is a shame. Which is a real shame. So that's my two cents on the topic.
It's very upsetting. It's super effing annoying. And you know, I believe that this can happen while you're sleeping. I believe that that you can be unaware and in that weird place between deep sleep and wake where you are unaware of what you're doing. And then, oh shit.
Yeah.
If there's a murder involved, to me, it's still a murder. If you're going to use the defense of, if you're going to say I was unconscious while this was happening.
Yeah.
I do think that there is something too. I was in this weird sleep wake thing, and this was a trauma thing that happened. But there's got to be
you
a consequence.
Still murder.
There's got to be
a
consequence.
A lot of people do that, and they just make waffles.
So anyway, let me take it back. We are now arriving. We are arriving at our final destination, which is our Arizona case, the Falater case, aka the sleepwalking murderer,
aka the blowjobber.
Seriously, I know that. I mean, can it get any?
I did look it up, you guys, and I've heard it both ways. But Bill Curtis himself on American Justice calls him Falater, so he's the Falater.
I mean, where the emphasis on the syllable, I will do whatever it is, but I think it's the Falater. Falater. No, it's the Falater. AKA the sleepwalking murderer. January 16th, 1997, a man by the name of Greg Coons heard screaming and moaning coming from a house next door. He then saw his neighbor, Scott Falater, put on gloves, drag his wife over to their pool, and hold her head underwater, whereupon Greg immediately called 911. The police arrived. Yeah, sure. No, you should absolutely say yeah, because that's what someone should do. Now, the police...
Can I just say to you, like, maybe you want to run over to and...
I was just going to say
I don't know what I would do. I might be scared to run over and say, dude, what the fuck? And pull the wife out of the pool.
I'm sorry, guys. Can I play the advocate of the devil? I'm going to play the advocate of the dev and say this. You don't listen. When you are presented with some weird shit, sometimes you freeze. You know what I mean? Again, I'm always like, Jessica, you are a strong ass and zapanzam woman. However, when weird things have happened to me, I've been like, like, I can't move.
You fly.
I do. It's weird. It's weird. So I'm saying, like, okay, hey, Jen, doctor.
No, I'm going to agree with you. And so no offense to Mr. Greg Coons, because the truth is, but I have to say, I did have that thought. And I bet he had that thought. I'm guessing, right? And then you're like, okay, what are my odds here? What are my chances?
There must have been so much, of course, going on.
And then how do you live with that inside? But as a woman, Jess, I have to admit, I would do the same thing. I'm guessing. I would
you don't know till you know.
And we women, we talk about this a lot, Dr. Crum, that we're all hardwired to understand our risk ratio, you know, and assess these situations, I think, you know?
So. I agree. And now it brings me to the fact, though, that I think there should be a book written called Dr. Crum and Mr. Falater. I'm just, that's something.
That's actually just going to be the, what's my wedding invitation.
I knew it already. Okay. So now let's get back to 911. So Greg immediately calls 911. We don't judge you, Greg. And the police arrive to find a bloody pool and Mrs. Filator dead with 44 stab wounds. Her husband, Scott, was present and had blood on his neck and Band-Aids on his hands. When he was brought to the police station for questioning, he denied any knowledge of the crime, even going as far as saying that he had no idea why he was being questioned, as shown in the police video. Now, upon being charged and tried, the defense, while acquiescing that he did indeed kill his wife, said he should be acquitted because he was sleepwalking. Filator, while acknowledging the murder, said he remembered nothing about what happened and that he was asleep at the time. According to the prosecution, Filator changed clothes and placed his bloodied clothing along with the murder weapon, which was a hunting knife, into a Tupperware container. He then put the container in a trash bag with his boots and socks and stashed the bag in the spare tire well in the trunk of his car. After he killed her, he took all the items that showed that he was the person that actually killed her and he hid them. So when the police searched Filator's Volvo, they found this evidence, including the gloves. For their part, the defense conducted sleep tests that concluded Filator fit the profile of a sleepwalker and had had a history of sleepwalking. The defense also said Filator was undergoing severe stress related to his job, sleeping only 2 or 3 hours per night at the time. The defense's explanation was that Filator returned home from work on the night of January 16th, 1997, had a dinner with his family, and tried to fix a faulty pool pump. After getting his tools, including the knife and work clothes, out of the Tupperware container in the trunk of his car, he decided to do the repair later, and that Filator went to sleep exhausted. Now, their explanation for what happened next was that Filator was trying to fix the pool pump as he was sleepwalking and reacted in a rage when his wife came across him. The defense called Filator's actions after the killing, quote, nonsensical and illogical, which are typical of a sleepwalker. And the defense also consulted a sleepwalking expert who said theoretically this was possible. Mm-hmm. Now, the prosecution and defense also portrayed differing views of the relationship between Filator and his wife. Mm-hmm. So prosecutors said there was discord over the family's Mormon religion, with his wife wanting to be less involved with the church. And the defense, however, said that the two were soulmates and there was no discord at all in their marriage. On June 16th, 1999, Filator took the stand and testified on his own behalf. Rarely, you know how I feel about this. Never a good idea.
You should never do it because then they can cross-examine you. Hmm?
Thanks, Dr. Crum.
Thank you, Dr. Crum, and opened up to an entire bag of tricks that, you know, the defense cannot protect you against. So often defense attorneys are like, you know, we're not putting you on the stand, sis. So in this case, Filator was like, I want to talk. And they were like, okay, honey, do your worst. So he was asked about the gloves that he put on after he stabbed his wife before he dragged her body to the pool. Would he have thought to wear gloves if he were sleepwalking? On the other hand, if this were premeditated, wouldn't he have put them on before the stabbing? All very good questions here. And finally, on June 25th, 1999, the jury returned its verdict. Scott Filator was found guilty of first-degree murder, and on January 10th of 2000, he was sentenced to life imprisonment with absolutely no chance of parole. So other than the case in Spain where the dude was sent to a psychiatric hospital, this is the one and only case. This is the first time we have a guilty verdict and imprisonment in every single case we've discussed today. And now that we've gotten to the end, I was going to ask Max, what are your thoughts?
I love that. That makes me happy because this specific one, there's too many things for me. If I were on the jury, this is like, no, it doesn't matter. Even if you were, again, even if you were sleepwalking, you did all the, like, listen, we've all gotten home drunk and like neatly folded our things and put away our clothes and gotten in bed. And then you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I really took care of myself. I have water here. But it's like, if those are your intentions for yourself, which are good, that just means his intentions for himself were to kill his wife at some point.
I was going to say, what sticks out to you the most as a, let's say that you were on the jury, what sticks out to you is what, the premeditation of it all?
What sticks out to me the most is the hiding of everything. Is the like cleaning everything up, hiding everything in the tire, in the, it's like, okay, that's not
even. Right, you even were aware of what you were doing. You were aware.
Even if, it doesn't matter to me though. Even if you're not, like, you did those things. And so it's like, I don't know how to reconcile that. for me. Like, so it's like,
I guess
it just
my
makes
thought
it look even more fishy that like he got everything out.
Right. Right. And my thought as a juror would be the same thing, sort of like, well, if you, even if you are saying to me that you don't remember any of it happening, you actually had the wherewithal to go ahead and hide your shit.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. Jen, are you researching something at this time?
Yeah, I'm looking up different Tupperware containers because that's the thing that I couldn't get out of my head. I was like, that's a big Tupperware container. Yeah, he's stored, I mean, he's stored a knife. And work clothes. I mean, how big are these Tupperware containers? That's
apparently,
what I was looking up.
I mean, was it actually a true Tupperware container?
They're very small. I'm looking
well,
it up.
Was it, are we just saying it was Tupperware? Was it Tupperware? Was it one of these? I
love this. Maybe it wasn't Tupperware.
You know, I mean, stick with us. We will always take, we'll be circumstantial.
Like, was it separate little Tupperwares or what?
That is a great question, but I'm also thinking of those things like those
bins, roller tubs.
Things you can put under your bed that, you know, I know I took to college when I was like, oh my God, I got to store my summer clothes during winter, my winter clothes during summer. And like,
right. Like some sort of Rubbermaid product that you can get from like a Home Depot. I'm wondering if it's a typo, but when I hear Tupperware, I think a nice little second grade sandwich container.
Yes.
You know,
so if we,
sounds
if anyone
really
out
a
there,
Rubbermaid commercial.
And I love
if
that you busted
from the
I
container
love
store. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, anyone at the container store, feel free to let us know. If you are in the container store right now shopping and you're finding some things that resemble something, you know, where you could put some items in your Volvo.
Another question, though.
Yeah.
Stabbed 40 times.
44.
44. Jesus. And then drowned. Why did he drown her as well? Like, what's with
okay.
the... It's like so much brutalization.
Yeah.
For what? Like,
that's a double double. Yeah.
Because it's I can see a world where, sure, she comes out. She's like, honey, you're. And then he's like, don't bother me while I'm. And just, I guess, whatever. Then she's still talking. Then he drowns her because he just wants it to stop. Sure. But even that's, I guess I can't really see that. But I'm like, that's psycho. That's like, you're going to kill people one day. I don't know.
Well, to answer your question, I did read other sites. And one of the theories was that perhaps he was sleepwalking when he stabbed her and then woke up and when he was awake, dragged her to the pool to sort of finish it off and hide all the evidence. That's just a theory. And then you're like, well, if you woke up, if that is true, then he should have called the authorities in an ambulance, realizing what he has done, not finished the job.
Well, and then put all of his shit away and then was like, this is not what I want people to see. Mm-hmm. Let me go put it in my.
I just wonder if you go into like a I'm going to get in trouble mentality,
look,
like a little kid.
I'm sure.
I'm going to get in trouble. Okay, I have to kill her. I have to. And it's like, and even if that is your, to me again, hearing all that, if that's your go-to instead of call the cops immediately once you've realized you've killed your wife, that I'm really glad he was found guilty.
Here's something that stuck out to me. So he's being interrogated by police initially, and he's saying that he doesn't even know why he's being interrogated. Well, how do you go from that to claiming by the time you get to court that you are sleepwalking? How are you aware that you were sleepwalking? You know, there just seems to be, to me, a real disconnect between the two.
Yeah, like maybe his lawyers gave him that.
Right. You can't.
Well, I'm sure, but
you can't change your story that much. You can't. I'm sorry. It's just not. None of it's plausible. I'm so glad that the jury was with it enough to say, you know, F these doctors who are telling us that this is theoretically possible for somebody to be stabbing and killing somebody whilst sleepwalking. And, you know, F that noise, you killed someone.
Right.
And the punishment or the punishment should fit the crime of killing someone. Despite the fact that you were sleepy time tea.
You know, there's premeditated murder. There's murder one, right? There's murder two. But at the very least, to all these other cases where they're, you know, considered not guilty, you know, could we at least have a manslaughter at the very least as opposed to walking free? I mean, there's just got to be something to your point of bringing justice to this poor, innocent person who at the end of the day doesn't have their life anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think 100% that's what I like in hearing all of those where it's like there's too many things going on. And now I'm just like a little bit upset that those men, it bothers me.
Well, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I agree with you in terms of like, there should be a charge for manslaughter, even if and they need to stay somewhere. And it's like, you did murder someone. That's just always, it's like, even if you're a really good person and you didn't mean to, you did it.
Are these all men, you guys, that we've?
Yes.
Yes. They're all men, right? There's not a single woman.
Nor.
I'd be curious to, I'm sure there have been cases of women sleepwalking and probably crimes, but not in the stuff that I research. But that's interesting too, isn't it? To your point of the boys club.
Oh, I mean it. That's my whole point is like most of these cases I notice have a through line of he's really tired and he's so stressed with work, you know, and and there's been trouble in the marriage. He's sad. Right
but exactly.
Now,
you know? That's
and it's
exactly
like,
what...
who the fuck gives a fuck about that? This woman is dead.
Which is what like, I love because it's like, he's really had a tough time at work. And then they're like cut to the woman who like works, but also has children that she's up with.
Correct. That's what I mean. Like, I'm sure his wife was more stressed because she was dealing with him.
Right. And more tie-tie. And she's like, and she's also like, God, you know what? I don't want to be Mormon. And like, I don't need to whittle wood. I don't need to whittle wood. What is polygamism?
And like,
you know what I mean?
Fix the pool. And he was like, no. And she was like, you need to fix the pool.
Thank you so much for being here, my dear old friend.
Listen, I will say, Max, you are a bright light in this weird, wacko world. And I'm so happy to see your face.
Thanks. Same to you, too. I'm glad you two are doing this. I love this shit. I'm really glad to be a part of it. So thank you for having me. Love you both. Goodbye. Goodbye.
We adore
love you.
I'll see you in my dreams.
Yes, you will. Oh, you be careful. You be careful. Don't you do anything we don't want to talk about.
Bye.
Okay, bye. You know what? Thank goodness Max came on here and gave us, you know, we here at the KIOB, we know that we discuss some really tricky shit and it sucks. And I hate to discuss, you know, such gruesome murders at the hand of sleepwalking. Like this is super scary to me because I do know people who sleepwalk. I'm not one of them. But I know people who talk in their sleep, who have slept walked, and it's very scary. So, but Max, you know, obviously, naturally, brings a nice little light wherever he goes. Thank God Max Crumb was here to discuss some weird, wacky ass shit with us today. And on that note, killers, we love you. Thank you so much for listening. Always sleep well tonight. Strap yourself down if you feel like you need to. And until next time, keep killing it.
And do not sleepwalk and kill anyone.
Killers, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content and follow us on Instagram at Killing It On Broadway and Twitter at Killing It On B-Way.
Subscribe to us for free wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and a lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It On Broadway is a production of Killing It On Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.